We're live.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vinci.
Hermano De Solo.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we will be talking about next week. In this episode, we will be discussing the sci-fi film Looper by Rian Johnson. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I'll go first. I have a few movies to talk about, three of which are good. Three of which are not good. One of which is actually really good. Brazil, from 1985, Terry Gilliam film, starring Jonathan Pryce. I will say the only thing good about this movie is Jonathan Pryce. One thing I have to say is I think Terry Gilliam does not have any restraint. And this movie is like 2.5 hours long, and I was so bored by it. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I understand some of the themes he's trying to explore in this movie, but it's way overblown. And if they cut an hour out of this movie, it would have been so much better. There's so many subplots in this movie that I was like, I don't care about this. It doesn't matter to the essential plot of the movie. It's just like, any of you seen this movie?
I have not seen it. I'm familiar with Terry Gilliam's work. And this movie, Tim, tread carefully, this movie is in the mecca of geek filmdom.
I understand that it has a huge cult following.
I have to see it to see if I get it.
There's some very cool visuals in this movie. But if you put it all together, it just doesn't do anything for me. Not that great.
I've heard of it, but I actually have no idea what it's even about.
A bureaucrat in a retro-future world tries to correct an administrative error and himself becomes an enemy of the state. So it really deals with a lot of just miscommunication. If somebody just said the right thing at the right time, everything could have been solved in this movie. But no, of course not. I don't know. It's just about, I don't know, 40 minutes into the movie, I'm like, oh my god, where is this going? Please, I started checking my phone. I was like, I just didn't really even care at that point. Although it was kind of distracting too, because Jonathan Pryce's mother is actually played by the same mother in Who's the Boss? Remember Mona?
Oh, right. Yeah.
It was pretty funny. I'll say nay on Brazil. I'm sure I'll get flack for that. Next movie, Rules of Attraction, from 2002. The only reason I even watched this was because it was coming off of Netflix Instant Queue a couple of days before I saw it, and a couple of days after I saw it, and this movie, not that great, because...
I'm looking at the description over your shoulder, Tim, and the description itself sounds like this movie sucks.
I'm trying to figure out why I had this in my queue anyways. I think you know what it might have been? Is that I had heard that it was based off of this book with the same title as, what's his name? The guy who wrote American Psycho. God damn it. Anyways, the same guy who wrote American Psycho wrote the book for this, in which it was adapted for the movie. So that, I think, might have piqued my interest, because I like American Psycho. I like the book, and I like the movie. And this movie has no likable characters whatsoever. It starts immediately with the three main protagonists, and you just immediately don't like them.
I've seen this. There is a callback to... There is one scene in the movie, did you catch it? James Vanderbeek's character, where someone calls him on this phone and no one answers, and all of a sudden he goes, Patrick?
Oh, really? No.
Yeah, you didn't catch that?
No, because I was so bored and distracted throughout this movie that I just didn't care. So,
I remember thinking, like, when at the time it came out, it was considered, like, sort of groundbreaking, because there are scenes in it that stick out, and I remember, because There's that one scene with a girl commits suicide to a song.
Yes.
And like every time I hear that song now, it always brings me back to this movie because it's so haunting. And then there's also the scene at the end where I think it's like a kid going to Europe and he's like backpacking through Europe. And it's like edited like really frenetically and it's like really, really well done. I can't remember...
Oh, yeah, I remember that too. Yeah, no, that was well done, but once again, a completely unlikable character because he's... At that time, you think he's the boyfriend of one of the main characters of the movie. And you kind of learn that it was all a misunderstanding, and it's just like, why should I
agree that none of the characters are likable. They're all despicable, especially James Van Der Beek, because everyone is kind of like scum of the earth type characters. Yeah. But outside of that, I could see there was a good movie there, but because they were so unlikable, I think that's pretty much what they were going for. I mean, if you look at American Psycho...
Well, I mean, there's no likable characters in that movie either, but it's the writing and the filmmaking that propel that movie and make it really interesting.
I agree. American Psycho is a much more interesting character and a better movie overall, but I don't think this movie's complete trash. I mean, what does it have on IMDb?
6.4, I think.
Which is not terrible. I mean,
6.7.
6.7. So, I mean, it's not terrible.
But a meta score of 50 out of 100.
Oh, I would put it right around there. I don't think the movie's great, but I have gone back and watched it once, like about maybe 3 years ago. And I was like, you know what? It's one of those movies I could pick out things that I like in it, but overall I can recognize that it's not a great movie.
Yeah, I can't really recommend it to anybody because...
It's hard to recommend this to anybody.
Unless you're a film student, then maybe you could find things, like you said, that scene that where the girl kills herself. You know, that's a well-done scene. It's haunting.
Every time I hear that song now, I think of that scene.
Bret Easton Ellis, by the way, is the author. Okay, next movie is The Sitter. From 2011, starring Jonah Hill, a college student on suspension is coaxed into babysitting the kids next door, though he is fully unprepared for the wild night ahead of him. And once again, not a great movie. There's some interesting elements there, especially because it's rated R and having these little kids involved in rated R adventures. Like I said, there's elements there that have potential. I think, ultimately, if you see the ads for this, you're thinking, a rated R Adventures in Babysitting, you know? But it never really fully completed on that promise. It didn't, actually, at all. There's moments in it that I kind of laughed at because of Jonah Hill, you know, just saying rude things in front of these kids. Kind of funny. But, ultimately, no. Nope. I say nay.
Would you go as far as to call the movie The Shitter?
You would laugh at that.
Well, that's funny.
And a movie, finally, that I will recommend and is actually pretty incredible is American Splendor, from 2003, starring Paul Giamatti. The plot is an original mix of fiction and reality illuminates the life of comic book hero everyman Harvey Pekar. Wally, are you familiar with Harvey Pekar in the comic American Splendor?
Nope.
It's kind of an underground comic, from what I gather, and it really is an interesting, a very interesting mix, mixing real interviews of the writer and himself a star of this comic book, American Splendor, and Paul Giamatti acting his life out in scenes from his life, and Harvey Pekar even narrates the movie itself. So it's really kind of meta and very interesting, very well done. They even show the real character, the real people that the characters that they're playing to. So Wally, I think you would really, really enjoy this movie. It's really interesting and really well done. It's well written and it's touching at times and it's made even more so. You even get that connection because you see these real people and you hear Harvey Pekar.
So is it like a documentary or like a biopic?
It's like a biopic, yeah, but kind of mixing documentary elements into it as well.
All right, because I mean, I saw the Schultz documentary not too long ago, and I love that thing.
The what documentary?
The Charles M. Schultz documentary. Oh, okay. About, you know, him, like his life and stuff like that. So this is probably something I probably will have to check out.
Yeah, yeah, and it may even get you interested in the comic, too. You know, he wrote it about his life and of his life as it was going on. He even wrote I won't ruin the ending of the movie, but the very end of the movie, it shows him, Harvey Pekar, and his wife signing autographs for My Movie Year, in which he wrote a comic
based on the
based
movie.
On making the movie. So it's really super interesting and really well done. Paul Giamatti does a great job. Of course, he's a great actor, you know. So I say yay on American Splendor. Hermano.
Okay, I saw two movies. First one I want to talk about is actually a movie I saw like 3 weeks ago, and I completely forgot to mention it. And with good reason, because I didn't like it. 21 Jump Street.
You didn't what? Like
you it? Didn't like it?
No.
That was all right.
I remember both of you guys saw this movie, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you talk about it in a
I know, at least Wally did.
I know, I talked about it in a yay or nay.
Okay.
And in my top six picks for the mid-year report.
Top five.
Okay. Oh, it's, yeah, top five for the mid-year report.
I don't know that I have to explain what the movie's about. It's pretty much like a loose retelling of the classic, what was it,
80s.
Late 80s, early 90s, yeah. 21 Jump Street TV show surrounding, or revolving around characters that looked young enough to play high school students, and they would infiltrate high school to try to catch, people, criminals in, you know, high school or whatever. But basically, I think I have a theory of why this movie was well received, because I remember leading up to this movie's release, everyone was kind of like shit talking it, because they're like, oh, what the hell is Hollywood thinking, making 21 Jump Street again, blah blah blah. And everyone went into it with really low expectations. It was kind of like the reverse hype, because everyone just went in thinking this movie's going to be total shit, I'm going in with low expectations, and it was slightly better than that, and everyone's like, hey, that wasn't half bad. Like, I hate when movies just get a pass, because they were so... I could literally go back and I know for a fact that a lot of people were just really trash-talking this movie as it was getting made. And all of a sudden when it came out, everyone's like, hey, you know what? Not bad, not bad.
Then would you say that it was overhyped for you?
I had no expectations.
I thought this movie was hilarious.
I honestly didn't laugh a single time.
Oh my god.
Not
even with the doves in the box?
No, not even once.
Oh,
like,
man.
Just everything about it. Like, they did that role reversal where, like, they go back to the high school and they're undercover, and Jonah Hill's character is all of a sudden the popular one because nerds are in.
Yeah.
And Channing Tatum's character is unpopular because, you know, jocks aren't as popular as they used to be when he was in school. So
he's a bully.
He's kind of a fish out of water, and Jonah Hill is all of a sudden the popular guy thrust into popularity, and like that was fine as like an exercise and like, you know, or an experiment, but overall I didn't think it was funny. Like, a lot of the jokes were just like, it was the typical, like you were just saying, Tim, where like in The Sitter, where like Jonah Hill would just, it's funny when he swears in front of little kids.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of the humor in this was that. It was just a lot of like profanity and like air humping.
You didn't like the car chase on the bridge?
No, the only time I actually almost laughed is when they arrested that guy and they tried to read his rights. Oh, they didn't read his rights.
Yeah.
And Channing Tatum starts to just hump him for no reason. I almost laughed at that. But even then, and then there's a reveal at the end of the movie that I thought was pretty lame. I mean, my favorite part of this movie, honestly, was hearing, I think it was like a remake of the original 21 Jump Street song that played at the end credits.
Oh, man.
And I was like, yes, I remember this
song. End credits are badass.
The end credits, I mean, just the song. I mean, otherwise, the movie was completely forgettable for me. I mean, obviously, I watched it 3 weeks ago, and I completely forgot about it.
Oh, wow.
To even mention it. So, I didn't like it. I'd say nay on it.
Nay?
Wow. I mean, I'm not the best guy for, like, comedy movies. I think they're fine, but comedy is so subjective, and I have a very specific, I guess, like, funny bone. Like, where, like, things like that don't make me laugh, but then really stupid humor will make me laugh.
Huh.
Which leads me into my next movie.
Oh, your mystery movie of the week.
My mystery movie of the week. I have no idea who directed it, but it's pretty much stars my favorite comedian going right now, because the last two movies he's made I thought were freaking ridiculously funny. Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh my god.
Also stars Anna Faris, The Dictator.
Wow.
Now, this movie wasn't as well received
as
21 Jump Street. Yeah, I don't know what its rating is, but
6.5 and a Metascore of 58.
I thought this movie was actually kind of funny. It stars Sacha Baron Cohen, and he plays a guy called Admiral General Aladdin.
Aladdin, yes.
Yeah, and he's pretty much it's kind of another fish out of water story where he gets tricked into coming into the United States on like some kind of like peace mission or something. I don't remember. It's kind of a loose plot, but basically he they set up a replacement guy that looks exactly like him to overthrow his dictatorship in his country, and basically the story goes from there. I thought there was a lot of funny things in this, but it was really crude humor, a lot of like rape jokes and like just stuff that's really out of place and just very like, you know, not PC. And the funniest joke in the movie for me was when he's still a dictator and he's in the beginning of the movie, and he's kind of ridiculous, and in his country he changes words to be Aladdin. So he changes the word a positive and negative to be Aladdin. So it means the exact same thing, the exact same word for both positive and negative. And it cuts to a scene where a guy's at the hospital and he's like, "Do you want the Aladdin news or the Aladdin news?" And he's like, "Your HIV Aladdin." And the guy doesn't know how to react. At first he's like, "Oh," like he's like, "Oh," like a sigh of relief. And then the doctor kind of just still looking at him and he's like, "Oh." Like, I cracked up. Like, stuff like that makes me laugh. It's stupid as hell, but I don't know. Like,
So Larry Charles directed it, and he also directed Borat and Religulous, which is awful, and Bruno, and he's also directed 17 episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes.
And I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. So, I mean, this is my type of humor. Like, I loved Borat and Bruno. Like, I thought those movies were hilarious. I kind of was really, really wishing that this movie was more of an unscripted comedy, because I love when he does that stuff. Right. And gets those natural reactions from people, and you're like, there's no way that person just said that, and it's all true.
I think that's what turned me off from it, is that it was a scripted comedy.
From The Dictator?
Right.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh, you haven't seen it, but you just that it was right. That you didn't want to see it.
Correct.
It's not half... I'm not going to completely say yay. I'll say meh, because I know it's not for everyone, but it definitely, you know, hit a note with me. I thought it was hilarious. It's definitely not as good as Bruno or Borat, but... I mean, I would still say, man, check it out if you're slightly interested. I think it will, you know, make you laugh at points.
Fair enough.
That's it for me.
Wally.
And this brings me to the movie that I saw this week that I believe Tim put on his trailer bitch list.
Mm-hmm.
End of Watch, mm-hmm. starring Michael Peña and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, I have some unfortunate news for you. This might be my favorite movie of the year so far.
Ooh. Favorite? Even more so than Dread?
Even more so than Dread.
What the fuck?
This movie is fan-freaking-tastic. It's you know, two beat cops going about their business and you know, just working the streets of LA. It starts off with a pretty cool chase scene and shootout. And you know,
this is a found footage movie.
It's supposed to be a found footage movie, but a lot of the time that's like the one distracting thing, that it goes from found footage to stationary camera a little too often for me. Like, they don't stick with just the found footage side. There's like there's like a, you know, Anna Kendrick shows up later. I'm like, well, if you're doing found footage, who's taping you and Anna Kendrick? Michael Peña, are you in the room too? You know, that aside, the writing is crisp, the dialogue is you know, between the two characters is fantastic. It's toward the end of the movie, it gets pretty brutal and at times a touch uncomfortable to watch. I could see some people in the theater kind of moving in their seats a little bit. But it's basically the story of, you know, it's a buddy cop movie, but a realistic buddy cop movie where they're not jumping over huge explosions and you know things like that. This movie is pretty awesome. So I'm going to give it a yay all the way.
Now I will say that the one positive thing I saw out of the trailer, even though I bitched about the trailer, was I was glad to see that Michael Peña was finally getting a lead role. You know,
he is awesome in his lead role.
He's a great actor. And I'm happy to hear that you liked him and that he's been well received in this movie as well. But this is going to lead me to ask you a question. So you say this is your favorite movie of the year so far. It might be the favorite movie.
I'm going to go see this movie again.
Okay. So if it is, then you would give it something like an A+, right?
I would give it a solid A at the very least.
Well, you gave Dread and you gave Expendables 2 an A+.
That's right.
But you think this is better than those.
Yes. But you also keep in mind that you're also comparing apples and oranges. You have a more realistic movie like End of Watch, which I was wholly invested in this movie the entire time I was watching it. I wanted to see what these guys were going to do next. I wanted to see what was going to happen. I was nervous for them around every corner. And like when I give like an A plus to like a Dread, I gave Dread an A plus because it is an exact interpretation of the comic. I gave Expendables an A plus because it was, I wanted a off the charts action movie, and I got an off the charts action movie. And this is just a solid, well done movie. And I gotta say, I loved every minute of it.
I know exactly where Wally's coming from. It's a difference, like we were talking about during our top 10 favorite movies. There's favorites and then there's best. Just because, you know, like he's given A pluses to those other movies doesn't mean that he naturally thinks they're the best movies that came out that he's seen so far. Like, I don't know if that's how he feels, but that's usually how I feel. Like, I could give something an A plus, but like The Gray, I probably would have given it like an A. But then I'll give something else like that I just had more fun with, or I just had a better experience with, like an A plus.
See, so, and this goes back to a discussion that you and I had while Wally was away, in grading movies, and in an A plus movie, you know, it's when we grade movies, you know, it should be based on the movie itself, not on your expectations and not on where the source material came from. It should be based on the construction and the reaction to the movie itself.
Yeah, but that's all, to me, that's all part and parcel with my movie experience. I have expectations. I go into the movie. Do you meet them? Do you not meet them? If yes, move to the next block.
Yeah, but so obviously this comes to us having different criteria for grading movies.
Yes.
Then. Okay, because so I don't grade movies based on my expectation to them or my knowledge of its source material. It comes only from the experience itself.
Yeah.
And how it's constructed. Okay.
I can also tell this movie is going to show up in my top 10 this year.
Okay, fair enough. Is that all you have to...
That's all I was able to watch this week. Okay. It's been a busy work week.
Very good. So now we'll move into Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a movie trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. Wally?
I am hitching my trailer firmly to Cloud Atlas, upcoming movie by the Wachowski siblings. Mm-hmm. It's got Tom Hanks. It's got, I saw Hugo Weaving in the trailer. Who else? We got Halle Berry, Hugh Grant. Who else? We got Keith David.
Jim Sturgis. Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, just a whole bunch of stars. From what I gather of the trailer, it looks like a cross-time movie, kind of like The Fountain, mm-hmm. where things are going on like with these people who are inextricably linked to one another, past, present, and future. And the visuals look fantastic. I mean, there's a scene in the trailer where I don't know what's going on, but I want to know what's going to happen. Where Hugo Weaving looks like he's standing there, and plates are just falling out of the sky. I don't know why they're falling out of the sky, but I need to know why this is happening. This movie, I think this movie's gonna be awesome when it finally hits, and I'm so looking forward to seeing this.
So yeah, it's really interesting that. You know, the Wachowskis directed it along with Tom, and I think his last name is pronounced Twiker.
Twiker, yep.
I think it's
Tikvar, sorry.
Who directed Run Lola Run, which we reviewed a number of episodes ago. And I think we all enjoyed.
Yes.
And Tom Tikvar really hasn't done much in a while. You know, it's been a little while, I think, since his name has been out there. So I'm really interested to see that collaboration. And I guess. That many people involved in the movie, especially directing it, might be beneficial for a movie like this in its scope, you know, because it's 164 minutes long.
Yeah.
And obviously you can tell from the trailer it's epic, an epic movie.
It was incredibly ambitious.
Very ambitious, exactly. Now, the trailer you're talking about is the one you saw before Looper?
Before Looper, and also ran before... I think also... I saw it online first.
Oh, well, there was a 5-minute long online trailer that was played online. I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen the 5-minute line. I saw the original trailer. I was like, oh, this is the new trailer for the Wachowski Brothers. I was like, oh, click.
Hermano, you've seen
this? I've seen both.
Both, and what did you think of the 5-minute trailer? I haven't.
The 5-minute trailer was insane. Like, as I was watching it, I'm like, how the hell are they going to manage all these stories and make it, like, somehow be cohesive or make sense to people that may not just be fanboys, that, you know, just a general audience. And it's a very ballsy move. I hope it pays off for them, because the movie does look incredibly interesting, and you know, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see it as well. I'm on board with you with the trailer. Hermano?
All right. I think a trailer just released today. I got to see the trailer for The Lone Ranger. New Gore Verbinski movie starring Armie Hammer and Johnny Depp. And it's actually... This wasn't like a full trailer. It was more of like a teaser trailer. But looks good. I mean, I'm a huge Gore Verbinski fan. I love The Ring. I love the Pirates movies, at least the first two.
You even like the second one, huh? That's one that's pretty annoying.
I like parts of the second one. I love the introduction of the Davy Jones character. And just Gore Verbinski as a visual director, like his, especially in The Ring, like I love The Ring. Mm-hmm. Like I know, even though it's a remake, like I love the look and the feel of that movie, the color palette.
He also directed The Mexican
and Rango.
And Rango, yeah.
Oh, and
Rango.
Mouse Hunt is an underrated movie.
It's actually his first movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
yeah. That,
his first feature.
And it's really funny too.
Yeah, it's not bad for like a family film. But
you like The Weatherman, didn't
you? I did love The Weatherman.
Yeah,
that was the Nicolas Cage movie.
Nicolas Cage
I've seen that. That was good. But this movie, you know, it's a Western, obviously. I can't quite tell what the story is yet, but I mean, I could tell visually it looks stunning. And you know, I have full confidence in him. I mean, I'm a Western fan, so I can't wait to see it. I mean, tonally it looks like it's going to be a little darker than the Pirates movies. It's not going to be as, adventurous or, you know, lighthearted, but, I'm totally looking forward to it. So, yeah, hitch into that.
Good. And I will reluctantly hitch my wagon to Paranormal Activity 4.
Yes!
So I saw the trailer for this. Now, a caveat, I have not seen the third one. I have the disc at home right now, and I will probably be watching it tomorrow with my hands over my eyes. Because the first two scare the ever-living shit out of me. And I cannot... It's those style of movies that... where... the danger always seems like it's just around the corner of the view of the camera, you know, just in the shadows so that you can't see. And then there's always jump scares. Mm-hmm. And those movies scare the fucking crap out of me. And however, I admit the first two movies are fantastic for what they are. They are excellent at what they are trying to accomplish. I saw the first movie in the theater for some godforsaken reason, probably because of all the hype that was around it. You know, it was such a low budget movie, and I find it extremely remarkable what they've been able to do with this franchise, considering its roots. An $11,000 movie gross is the
well, that is like the most like percentage wise of like
it's the most successful movie of all time.
Of all time, yeah.
Based on
budget and gross.
Right. So, and that they were able to successfully continue the franchise with more money, obviously, and I guess retain the same tone. Now you've seen the third one, Hermano.
Yeah, I was starting to get a little scared because the second one is probably my least favorite, and I was like, man, I wonder if it's just going to keep going downhill. And the third one, actually, I think is one of the better ones, if not the best one, in my opinion, because they came up with a lot of creative ways to explain why they're filming things and like just cool little techniques that they used, different ways to scare you instead of always just a jump moment, maybe actually show you and like show you a scene where something's in the room and the character, unbeknownst to the character that's also in the room, or just little moments like that, and you're just like, holy shit. Like I think I love these movies. I'm opening weekend every time they come out because it's so much fun in a packed theater watching this movie with a bunch of people that are genuinely scared. It's a lot of fun.
And we were talking about the movie experience, the movie theater experience a week or two ago, and this is one thing that you enjoy.
Like, oh, it's to me, it's, there's nothing else like it all year. It's my one time in the theater that I'll have the most fun.
Yeah, for Paranormal Activity 4, the trailer, once again, looks like it's carrying on the same tone, the same vibe as the first three. It looks pretty good. It looks... I mean, the plot is, it has been 5 years since the disappearance of Katie and Hunter, and a suburban family witnessed strange events in their neighborhood when a woman and mysterious child move in. So, the trailer shows a lot of the same techniques, although it looks like it's using, like, FaceTime video chat
on
a webcam or a cell phone. So, maybe updating it a little bit, and but once again keeping to the same vibe as the original. So I'll hitch my wagon to this, even though I'm probably only going to see it next year when it comes out in DVD, and Paranormal Activity 5 is about to come out in theaters or something. So yeah, that's Paranormal Activity 4. Okay, time to move on into our review of Looper. The plot. In the year 2072, time travel will be invented, but it will be illegal. When the mob wants to get rid of someone, they will send their target 30 years into the past, where a looper, a hired gun, like Joe, is waiting to mop up. Joe is getting rich and life is good, until the day the mob decide to close the loop, sending back Joe's future self for assassination. The writer and director, Rian Johnson. The actors, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, Jeff Daniels, and Emily Blunt. Walter.
Yo.
You had seen Rian Johnson's debut, Brick, right?
I kept falling asleep during Brick.
Okay, so you admitted you did not care for his take on the classic noir genre.
It couldn't hold enough of my interest to keep me invested in the movie. I'm going to try to go back and see it again, because since this movie's come out, Brick has been brought up a lot. And I hear a lot of great things about it. I need to see the whole movie for myself. I actually have to sit down at a time where I can actually be awake the whole time and be sure. Okay, now I can't fall asleep.
And you have not seen the second movie, Brothers Bloom?
I have not. That's okay. It's in my queue, though.
All right. So do you think that his third movie is a step in the right direction when it comes to genre films?
As far as a sci-fi movie goes, this movie's pretty awesome.
And
as far as the concept that he introduces in this movie as well, those are also pretty awesome. Even the weapons, I think, are very, very cool looking, like the blunderbuss. I have to see his other two movies before I can give him a comparison, like see if he's going in the right direction.
Okay.
But I'm just looking at this as a sci-fi movie, as a separate unit, which is one of my favorite genres. I have to say this movie is I love this movie.
You do?
I do.
Yeah. Hermano?
I'm with Wally. So basically, when I was leaving the theater, initially, I wasn't sure that I loved it, but I know that I liked it. But I was like, man, I really thought leaving the theater, I would have just come out and just been like skipping for joy. Like, holy crap, that was the greatest thing I've seen all year and whatnot. And I think that definitely the hype had a little to do with it, because, of course, this movie was one of the most anticipated movies of the year and everyone was talking about it. But like Wally, I definitely liked the movie overall. I definitely like a lot of the ideas it introduced, even though I didn't think all of them were necessarily new ideas. I feel like it took a little bit from maybe past time travel movies. I know it's going to sound dumb, but there's a part in it that really reminded me of Time Cop. There was a little bit of Back to the Future in there. Stuff like that. But there was nothing overall that I had a huge issue with. And there are a couple things I want to talk about in spoilers when we get there, that I think are potential issues, problems, or no pun intended, loopholes in the movie. But overall, I definitely had a good time watching it.
Yeah, me too. I really, really enjoyed this movie. And I think that years from now, I think it's going to be looked upon the same way maybe 2001 Space Odyssey and Blade Runner are. I know it took some cues also from those movies, from especially Blade Runner. I saw some influence from Blade Runner and Terminator. Despite that, I think it's going to be looked upon as a very influential movie years from now.
I have a little issue with that. I mean, overall, yes, I think it's good, but people just slinging around the word instant classic, or comparing it to Blade Runner or The Matrix as the best sci-fi movie since either one of those, and I'm like, yes, it's good, but I think we should give it a little time to see what it if it's going to endure.
Maybe
over
I'm
time.
Saying that because I see the influences so much, and that I still think he's able to execute a lot of very unique and interesting things, despite the influences.
No, I totally agree, but I don't know. I just whenever I hear somebody say masterpiece or instant classic, I mean those are pretty strong words.
Sure,
you can't just label that. It's kind of unfair to the movie, because in a way it's got a lot to live up to, and if it doesn't, all of a sudden people are like, that's not a masterpiece. That's
I kind of saw you using similar terminology when it came to The Dark Knight.
I did not call The Dark Knight a masterpiece.
Really?
No. Or instant classic? No way.
Really?
We can rewind the tapes. There's no way I called it.
No, not the third one. The second one.
The second one, I would definitely call... For, in the comic book movie superhero genre, I think it's a masterpiece. Yes, mm-hmm. I would say that.
But back to Looper. I really, like I said, I really enjoy this. I think it's very smart. I love the writing and the filmmaking. I love how it doesn't get bogged down in the time travel elements, yet there's really a lot to think back on and try to piece together. Although, if you think about it too much, your mind's going to just go crazy.
And you start looking for straws.
And I think that's one of the best things, one of the movie's greatest strengths is it doesn't try to overcomplicate things and try to explain time travel. Like, there's a scene specifically where they're like, I don't want to talk about time travel.
Right.
Like, what's the point? Like, yeah. And it's the best thing the movie did because it didn't, like I was saying, like, it didn't try to overcomplicate it or try to throw a bunch of jargon at you that no one's going to understand anyway. And I definitely think that was a huge plus.
Yeah, it was funny in that scene you're talking about when Bruce Willis says we're going to start drawing on napkins and putting straws and stuff together, make diagrams.
Yeah.
And it's not, you can't do that. You know, that reminded me of Back to the Future Part 2 because that is the best movie I've ever seen for an explanation of time travel and the repercussions of it.
Uh-huh.
When he draws the diagram on the chalkboard for Marty, you know, it just reminded me of that because that's really well done. Did you notice like the two main themes here of, you know, the idea of self-identity, you know, is it really possible to change your own destiny? And also there's a debate of nature versus nurture.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think we're going to have to talk a little bit more about that in spoilers, nature versus nurture, because one thing I really loved about this movie is halfway through, it just takes a left turn. And they, thank God for the marketing of this movie. They marketed the shit out of this movie, but they didn't spoil anything.
They hit an element of this movie very, very well. And you can almost say this movie's kind of fit into two genres almost, or it's two different movies.
Well, also, did you see the elements of like a futuristic Western?
Oh yeah,
especially
absolutely.
With
the
guns, of course.
The Gatlin.
Great.
Yeah, Wally was saying he liked the guns, but I was telling Mia when I left, and I was like, the guns just seem like one of those things that someone would throw in just because, like, hey, isn't this cool? Everybody, look at this gun. Isn't it cool? Like, it kind of seemed a little silly in a future that you're in the future, like, what were they, like 2000?
2044.
2044. So they're like, you know, 28 years in the future, and they're using like this gun that. Yeah, thanks. They're using this gun that, even by today's standards, is really a shitty gun.
The blunderbuss?
They constantly go out of their way to explain how that gun is a piece of shit. Like, why do you guys use it? Because, I mean, it's a can't-miss gun from, like, 10 to 15 yards. But anything further than that, that gun's, like, useless.
Yeah, but it's also incredibly powerful. So the idea is to one-shot and one-kill a person. So as soon as that person
so can
appears...
other guns.
Yeah, but the idea is you need to be able to do it quick. Like, you like at one point, you see like an FM, you see a 22 FN, and that fires a bunch of small bullets very quickly. Like this, you need to kill this, like whoever shows up, you need to shoot them fast before they can realize what's going on. And you would want something like a heavy like hand cannon to be able to do that.
But really,
and that in itself wouldn't be a very accurate or useful gun in the field.
But really, I mean. I don't think this is a spoiler, but when guys get zapped back into the past, they're always tied up. Like, they're not going anywhere. There's only one time when someone's not actually tied up and bound. So those guns, I mean, he could have, like, sat there and ate a sandwich while those guys were just sitting there tied up. Like, you don't have to dispose of those guys quickly. I don't want to talk too much about the gun. It's not a huge nitpick for me. I just thought it was one of those things that's, like, it was just thrown in as, like, a cool factor rather than, like, some important story element. You know what I mean?
Other than the guns, what did you think about the future world that was built?
Eh.
Really?
It didn't seem very futuristic at all. And
well,
I
think
that.
That's the point.
It didn't date the movie because, I mean, you could have easily dated the movies. Like, you look at movies now and you go back and look what people in the 80s thought the future was going to be. And those movies are extremely dated when you go back and look because everyone's driving like...
I want my hoverboard.
Exactly. well, no, the hoverboard's cool, man. I can't nitpick
that. I still want that.
Exactly. But
I didn't get one.
When you look at like someone's interpretation of a car in the future in an 80s movie, it always looks really stupid. You look at it now and like, no one, that car seems so impractical.
There's no flying cars.
No flying cars.
And there weren't any flying cars in this movie because there were all cars like, that's one thing I found out. I saw like a Honda Fit and I'm like, why is a rusted out Honda Fit? That's 30 years old at this point. You
and
know?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character drives like a Mazda Miata, like a little red Mazda Miata.
Well, they kind of played that up like he really takes care of it.
And an old pickup truck.
Yeah, like an old Ford F-150. That's even old. It's like 10 years old. in our time right now, you know, it's just been modified for whatever future gas.
It's like solar power because they have like power plates on the front and like the hose that goes into the tank.
So I found it, you know, very realistic in that way. It wasn't overly futuristic.
Except for the hover bike.
But even that, yeah, I thought...
That was probably the most, other than that time machine element, the time travel element, the actual machine. Well,
the hover bike is just a big jet engine with wings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't really exist right now. I mean, even if it did, like, it's
jet
not
engine
like...
wings exist. I've seen them.
Star Wars? I mean, like, for sale. Like, no one is out there riding a hover bike right now, you know? So, I'm just... Like, that was as pretty much as futuristic as it got, and I liked that.
Yeah, but even then, they don't, like, really show you that all at once. Like, you see Paul Dano on it, and it doesn't start. And then, it shows up, like, one other time where, like, someone makes a getaway on it, and then it shows up a third time in the movie.
It goes out even when they're...
Yeah, the thing never seems to work right.
The telekinesis abilities, you know, established in the beginning, but not overused, and comes back in a very satisfying way later on. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, right away from the beginning they call it TK in the movie telekinesis.
Yeah.
And it's not like, they made it almost seem like there's not like levels of it. Like everyone's pretty much on the same page. Like,
yeah, they even call it out. Like he says, like, "Oh, we expected to see superheroes, that never happened."
Yeah, because all people can really do is like
float quarters
and do very small things. And I was like, okay, I wasn't quite sure at that point. So they still hit it pretty well. Like I wasn't quite sure at that point. Like, is this going to come back later, or is this just something cool, like futuristic he's trying to add in?
See, I disagree. I saw it coming a mile away from the trailer.
Really?
Yes.
What did you see in the trailer that made you believe that?
I will save that for spoilers.
Okay.
Huh. Interesting. What about the acting jobs in this? What'd you think overall? Gordon Levitt and Bruce Willis and Emily Blunt?
I loved Gordon Levitt in it. I thought he was just that cool kind of... I want to see him in another role like this, where like he just plays like that cool kind of asshole tough guy.
Brick?
That's true. And also, there was a little bit of that, but not as much of the asshole part, but in Inception. You know, he's cool comic collector.
He's cool comic collector in Inception, but like he's more of a badass in this one. Like no one gets in Joe's way. He's always sharply dressed. He's kind of like a mafia, like an up and coming mafia guy, like a wise guy. Yeah. Always, you know, dressed nicely. His hair's always nice. You know, it's always neat. He has the best things in his apartment.
Yeah.
And if you cross him, he'll shoot you with his blunderbuss.
You know, that's interesting. You talk about the mafia. It's so interesting that the mafia controls like time in this movie. You know, and how much that just is just so badass. Like you said, it's just amazing that concept. But think about it at first, you know, these people in present day 2044 are hired by people from the future to be assassins.
2074.
Okay, 2072.
No, 30 years in the future. 2044 plus 30 is 2074.
2072. Right there on IMDb, buddy.
Well, they tell you 30 years in the future.
Nearly 30 years in the future.
Well, I think something happens that speeds up the 30-year process.
Okay. Anyways, the point is, how does that first get established? How does somebody believe in 2044 that this guy is from the future?
You wouldn't believe Jeff Daniels' character? Well, that would be a monumental sell to someone.
Right.
Well, you'd have to take him on a looper hit and be like, all right, watch this clock. In about 3 seconds, someone's going to appear. I'm going to shoot him. Like, that's bullshit. There's no one here in this... Oh, shit!
That's a good way to
explain it. That's the only way you could do it. Like, all right, I'm in.
But you have to do that multiple times.
And plus, look at the people he's recruiting, too. I mean, they make a point to point out that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was kind of like just a street kid.
Yeah.
I mean, he's recruiting these types of people. So, I mean, and you believe anything.
And
if
they're not deferring
him
from his drug addiction, you know?
Exactly. If you were on the street hungry and you had no life's path, like, you would probably just go along with what anyone said.
Another very realistic point I thought about drug, the how you get high, the eye drops.
Yeah.
Yep. Very well done. Very cool.
Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't overly complicated.
I think Emily Blunt is awesome in this movie. I don't think I've really seen much of her previously. I may have.
You haven't seen The Devil Wears Prada?
No, I haven't, actually.
I have. It's one of my guilty pleasures.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm being totally serious.
And then like, how was she in that?
She was good, but she still had the British accent in that movie. So in this one, she had to hide it.
She did a good job of that.
Country it up.
Yeah, she was really good.
Yeah, I thought she was kick ass badass. You know.
Yeah. I thought everyone was great. I think for once in a movie, we can say that the makeup looked pretty damn good.
The prosthetics on Gordon Levitt? On
Joseph Gordon Levitt? Yeah. Really good. Yeah. Like, I bought that could have been Bruce Willis when he was, like, mid-20s or whatever. But yeah. My one complaint is that I feel like the movie's pace was awesome until it got to Emily Blunt. I feel the movie kind of hit, like, a wall.
I agree with you only from the point of the first time watching the movie. And... because you kind of are taken aback at how slow it goes at that point.
Because something happens at that point that the movie goes at a completely different
pace.
Direction.
Yeah, a completely different direction, different pace. But you don't, at that point that it slows down, you don't know what direction it's going in. No. Until maybe 20 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back on it, I think it's beautifully done.
Yep.
I think it's... Upon rewatching, it's going to be amazing. You know,
so you've seen it once or twice?
No, I've only seen it once, but I just have that feeling watching it again. I want to see this movie again.
As do I.
Like right now.
Like, I'll wait.
Right this minute. you know how you wanted to see, what was it again? Last week that we talked about?
Oh, The Master.
You want to see The Master right away? This is what I want to do with this movie. I want to watch it right away. Yeah. I do have one acting gripe.
Uh-oh. Don't say it. It pains me. I think I know where you're going.
Bruce Willis.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't think you were going there.
No. Who do you think I was going to say?
The kid.
Oh, no. No. Okay. No. Bruce Willis. I have a feeling that they left some stuff on the cutting room floor with him. Because the scenes in which he's supposed to be a little bit emotional, didn't buy it at all. And
I want to rebut, but I think it's a spoiler. So
yeah, I don't know. I just have a feeling that he, I don't know, because they filmed this movie last year,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know how Ryan Johnson got Bruce Willis for this role, because I don't know of many. Well, no, it couldn't. This movie was made for what, $20-30 million?
I think $30 million was the budget.
And it couldn't have been because of money. I don't think they had a lot of money to throw. Yeah, $30 million was the budget. And, you know, Ryan Johnson had already done a movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And so there was that connection there already. But Bruce Willis, maybe... Yeah, because I don't know of many lesser roles, you know, not lesser roles, but more independent roles that he's taken.
He did Moonlight Kingdom.
Yeah, but that's a really established director. You know, Moonrise Kingdom.
I mean, compared to Ryan Johnson, yeah, definitely.
So maybe his heart just wasn't into it as much. I just didn't see the commitment as I did with all the other actors.
He's one of those actors. Whenever I say, like, hey, my favorite actors are the guys that when I'm watching them, they're their character they're supposed to be portraying. When I watch Bruce Willis in almost every movie, I always see Bruce Willis. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's an acting fault of his. Or that he's so big that I just can't see past that it's Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I can see that. Wally?
I think that what you might be picking up on is, when you see the movie, you see Joseph Gordon-Levitt's progression into Bruce Willis at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And think about the stuff that he does during that progression after he closes the loop.
Yeah.
He keeps going in his chosen profession. He becomes, you know, far more grizzled and he more ruthless as he goes along. Like, there's a scene where he pulls up alongside and just shoots into like a cab window.
Uh-huh.
And basically he's after that point, he's no longer a looper. He's basically a killer for hire.
Yeah.
So then when you see Bruce Willis later, that kind of
but
stony face, like, kind of not there, that I bought that as being a guy who's done so much over the past 30 years and now has to continue his mission doing something else.
But at that point, no, he had been softened by his wife. You know, he had learned the error of his ways by meeting his wife, and he had become a much softer character, much softer person. You know,
and I don't want to say, because I'm not sure if that's a spoiler.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. A character that I thought was a weak point and almost didn't need to be in the film was Kid Blue, the the assassin who was
the Gatman.
Was fumbling with his gun and you know, had
shot
trouble
his,
with that.
Shot his foot off.
I only saw him as like a trope, just to have him be accident prone and be an underperformer. I kind of found him a little bit annoying, and I think he was only written in as a vehicle for Bruce Willis to get to the bad guy ultimately. I mean, otherwise, there's really no reason for him to be in this movie.
He was a curveball to me.
A curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Wally might be going where I think he's going, then I feel exactly the same way.
Continue.
I can't.
Oh, you can't.
I think I can without being a spoiler. I don't know if this is where Wally was going, but as I was watching the movie, and I almost felt like at points, like Jeff Daniels was... I kept trying to think of, like, why would Jeff Daniels keep this guy around? He seems like a guy who really runs a tight ship. And I'm like, why would he keep this dude around? Like, he seems like he's kind of a buffoon.
He is.
And I was like, there's got to be some point to this. And for a while, I was like, Eureka, I think I got it. I felt like that would... I thought the movie was going to go to this. Because I think... Did we mention that Jeff Daniels is sent back from the...
He's the mob boss in the present of 2044 that was sent back...
Sent back from the future.
From the future, yeah.
I thought Kid Blue was a younger version of him. Was actually him.
Okay. See, I didn't think that at all.
Because... And he was protecting him because he's like, I got to watch this dude. But then at one point, there's a scene where he does something... like a physical action to him. And I was like, all right, is he? Like, why would he do this to himself? And I'm like, no, this can't be him. Like, that's the point where I was like, all right, I don't think it's him anymore. But they kind of had similar appearance a little bit. So I thought that was the young Jeff Daniels.
Interesting. The idea of the Rainmaker that they establish as the mob boss of the future, I kind of wish they explored that a little bit more, you know, or at least the idea of him and his influence in the future. Because they only really touched on it a little bit. And it took me a little while when they bring him up again later on in the film to remember back, oh yeah, the Rainmaker, and he was this and this, you know. So, I don't know, what did you guys think about that?
I don't want to... Nah.
We're going to be getting into spoilers.
There was one thing that I was just like, it didn't make sense after the movie was over. I don't think it's a spoiler. At one point when they're actually flashing back to the future, and there's like a guy conversing with Bruce Willis, and he's like, oh, the Rainmaker, he's closing all the loops or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And at one point, like, that makes it seem like he's just the one guy who's going up against all these different mafia cartels or whatever.
Yeah.
Or groups. And at one point, it flashes to a TV, and it looks like a stock ticker is going across the TV. And on the bottom of it, it says something like Rainmaker, and then it has some numbers. I don't know anything about stocks, so I was like, wait a minute, one guy? Why is he on a stock ticker?
Right.
It didn't make any sense. Like, he's not a corporation, right? Like,
yeah, and they also bring up... they show a scene in which Bruce Willis is talking with somebody on the phone, and he it's the only information that they have about the Rainmaker, and it's a series of numbers.
Yeah, they never explain. Like,
yeah, they never explain what that scene was, because there's a hell going on around this guy giving him the information, you know, and then he's cut off all of a sudden because of an explosion or something.
Yeah,
and so. That's the only thing that he has is the series of numbers.
And it seemed like one of those things, those very convenient things, like, because this guy, the Rainmaker, seems very mysterious. Nobody knows who he is. They really paint him as this really mysterious figure who's taken out all these guys.
Who came out of nowhere.
Came out of nowhere. So how the hell did this guy have any information on him if nobody knows who he is?
Right.
And that guy just is killed. You never find out how he... had any information.
And what was
on
going on there? Was there a war? Was
I feel like maybe the Rainmaker knew that this guy had information on him and was sending people after him, and he was trying to just get it out before he was killed.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I get from it.
Was there anything else you guys want to mention before we get into spoilers?
The Gatmen are the least fearsome henchmen I've ever seen in any movie. These guys can't hit the broadside of a barn. Yeah. They're like, oh, the Gatmen are coming. Oh, not them. I better not stand in front of them. There's a couple of shots, like a couple times where they have someone dead to rights and still miss from like 3 yards away. I'm like, really? Like, seriously, you guys are like, I'm completely not afraid of you. Like, oh, like at one point where Jesse shows me, he's like, oh, he's the best shot with a Gat that I know. I'm like, oh, what the hell does that mean? I haven't seen much of these guys yet. Mm. As far as being able to shoot anything, I would not be afraid of this guy.
Yeah, but you kind of trust Joseph Gordon-Levitt at that time in what he says, and then the prior
performance of the other Gatmen.
And then ultimately, you don't really get to see Jesse in action.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I liked that scene because I thought he was intimidating without really doing anything.
Right, but also you could tell that he would do the right thing ultimately. Right.
But you don't really know that until Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character comes in and is like, he's the best shot that I know, and he's also. like he says, like he's fair or something like that. You know, he's not like just one guy who's just going to shoot you for no reason.
Exactly.
But overall, I like that scene. You could definitely buy that he's a guy to be feared, and even Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was afraid of him.
Sure.
And the guy doesn't do anything. He doesn't do anything aggressive. Doesn't really move.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he's somebody to be feared.
But even though he was afraid of him, he still exuded that confidence, and that's great. Great job by Gordon-Levitt. He just exuded this confidence in this movie that you felt safe when you were around him. You know. Once again, anything else before spoilers?
No. Spoilers.
Spoilers. It is. So the kid, who is Emily Blunt's kid,
yes,
turns out to be the Rainmaker.
Yes.
Now, that is something I did kind of see coming.
I did not.
That was super predictable.
Now, Wally, why didn't you see that coming?
Because of the way the Rainmaker is described earlier on, there were two red herrings that I picked up on that I thought could possibly be the Rainmaker. The first was Paul Dano's character, because the Rainmaker is listed as having an artificial jaw.
Yeah.
And the first time you see, after Paul Dano gets captured by the mafia for letting his hit escape, they remove his jaw, and they remove other things. So why would this person who's not dead yet, and can't be dead for another 30 years, that they've done all this mutilation to, he has a very good reason for revenge. I thought that was going to be a swerve.
When do they remove his jaw?
When they're getting his future self to come back. He can't talk when he gets to the
That's because his tongue isn't there.
Yeah,
he doesn't have a tongue, but his nose is
his arms, his legs.
Okay, let's go back to that scene. That scene is fucking awesome.
Yes,
where
it's creepy as fuck.
It is creepy. It is so well filmed because there's nothing obvious about it. It just happens. You know, it unfolds in little increments at a time. You know, his feet disappear.
No,
his hands.
First, his hand. Like his
fingers, disappear one by one.
Yeah, but it's cool how it's filmed because it doesn't show them disappearing.
No.
It's just shots back and forth to
his
face.
It's a reaction shot, then it goes back and he's missing another finger. Yeah. Another reaction shot, then he's missing like a thumb or something.
How awesome is that scene and how it unfolds?
Honestly, like, I've watched a lot of horror movies and that unsettled me more than most horror movies because I could just imagine that if something like that was even possible, that I would fear that, like...
And that's a credit once again to Rian Johnson.
Because you can't run.
Yeah.
Where would you go?
Right. It's a credit to the world that he builds, you know, and making you believe that. And that's so key in making you feel that, oh my God, this could happen, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he sees himself on the table before he ultimately just falls down and dies.
Yeah, well, he doesn't fall down and die. He gets shot.
And you see Paul Dano in the amputee thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that maybe the Rainmaker was him because of the amount of description, like the fact he has an artificial jaw, and someone who's been mutilated that way would probably have a lot of artificial parts.
So is that there was another red herring?
I thought the red herring was Kid Blue. That after all of this time of being kind of like, I'm the whipping boy, I'm the joke, who's laughing? You know, he's the one that's getting the last laugh in the future. Like in 30 years' time, he usurps Jeff Daniels,
right,
to take over the whole organization and start, like, you know what, I'm just going to kill everybody.
Exactly. Now, I agree with you. I thought that it would have been him up until a certain point in the movie, and that was when they start to reveal what those numbers meant.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get a little... This is after Joseph Gordon-Levitt shows up at the barn, Emily Blunt's farm, and you see a kid there, and then the numbers are revealed a couple more times. You're like, oh, this must be a date of some sort. You know, this probably is something.
I thought it was like a social security number.
Either way, it was relevant to the search. And then they kept staying in place on that barn. I was like, well, this kid has to be it, you know?
Well, I think from the moment from when he has his first freak out, and you could just see it in Emily Blunt's eyes that she's really scared of he's going to do something, and she locks herself in a safe, like to protect herself. And I'm like, it's this kid, like, well, especially when they were like, this guy, no one knows where he came from. He's taking out whole mobs by himself.
Yeah,
and I'm like, this dude's got to be supernatural,
right? Well, the thing is, before that scene, there's the dialogue, the back and forth between the kid. Played by Pierce Gannon. That's the little kid's name, real name. And he's great and creepy in this. And once again, I have to give credit to Rian Johnson for getting this performance from him. You know, because at that young of an age, it takes a lot of skill to be able to gain a performance, and not just with directing, but also with the script and how you film it. You know, and it kind of reminded me of like a young Dakota Fanning, how great she was when she was really young.
I wouldn't say his acting was great, but he had great like expressions.
Yes,
when he was supposed to be angry and look mad, like he looked the part.
Yeah,
he didn't look like a cute little kid. He looked like an angry, like almost like little adult.
And especially how many scenes of it of those reactions are done in slow motion.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing, because you're able to see every little tick, you know?
Yeah.
That back and forth between him and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you're like, what is up with this kid? You know, this is a really smart kid for a six-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
And then when he goes crazy and you see the slow motion and Emily Blunt run into the safe, I honestly thought that was because of her. That she might...
do something.
Cause a damage, and it wasn't because of him.
Oh no, you know, I saw that come from him all
the way.
Really? Yeah,
yeah.
Especially like it looked. I think did it show that scene? The really, really. This movie got really dark for a second. Like Bruce Willis is hunting down kids.
Right.
He doesn't know which kid is the rainmaker, but he know he has three possible kids.
Yeah.
And he goes to the first kid's house, and he just meets him after school or something, and he
shoots, him.
He shoots just cold blood. Shoots this kid, and he looks like a little 6-year old kid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? And like, and then he tries to do it again, but it ultimately gets stopped. And then I'm like, it's got to be the kid, like the kid that,
right?
You know, ultimately, the whole movie's going to come to an end at the farm.
Now that scene, that's what I'm talking about, is when Bruce Willis shoots the kid. His reaction after that, I just didn't buy.
I sort of bought a guy that was conflicted. He had this conflicted look on his face, like I like he's almost like he was trying to think it through. Like, do I really want to do this? Do I really want my? I mean. We didn't even mention that the reason Bruce Willis is doing all this is because in the future his wife is accidentally killed
while
he's being captured and trying to send him back into the past to be killed by his younger self. And that's the whole reason he sends him on his journey, is he wants to somehow kill the Rainmaker so that his wife doesn't accidentally die.
Yeah.
And you could see him kind of working it through in his head, like, I want my wife back so bad, but do I really want to kill a kid?
Yeah, but you know, when that scene, of all the scenes, it's a reaction shot, it's shot from far away and on the ground, so you don't get a close-up of his face, and that's what I'm saying, is that I don't think he was...
Well, isn't that more of a fault of the director, maybe, not getting a close-up of his reaction?
No, I think he did that on purpose, because...
You didn't think he can get the performance out of Bruce Willis?
Exactly.
I can see that. I mean, we'll never know, but I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah. When Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Emily Blunt, they have sex, I just didn't buy that, but I was glad that was the only connection to them, and that was a physical relationship, because that's all it turned out to be, and it wasn't like a true romantic interest. It was just like two people caught up in an emotional situation, and they just, you know, needed something to...
It was completely unnecessary. I mean, the movie did not benefit... Or suffer.
Right.
I think it mostly suffered, but that scene was completely unnecessary.
Right. It
didn't do anything to progress the story.
Yeah.
It didn't make me believe that Joseph Gordon-Levitt does what he does eventually for that sole reason. That scene was completely, could have been gone, and it wouldn't have done anything to the movie.
Yeah. Wally?
Those are the scenes with the... you guys were talking about TKs earlier, and I said there was a big giveaway for the trailer, and there's two parts in the trailer. You see Emily Blunt spinning a cigarette lighter in bed.
Yep.
So at that point, I'm like, oh, there are psychics in this movie. And then they show you an up-top shot that they show in the movie of everything exploding in the cornfield when the kid unleashes all of his power at once. Mm. So
but
I was like,
really,
I was like, that has to be like the crux of this whole movie, that they're trying to, whatever this is in the movie, this is going to be a focal point.
Yeah.
So, like, the whole, like, TK thing, like, once they explain them, like, oh, so there are going to be, like, people who have, like, psionic abilities in this movie.
So...
It's just a matter of finding
out. You're referencing the trailer. How many times did you see the trailer?
I saw the trailer about 3 or 4 times before the movie.
So when you go into the movie, do you use the trailer as a reference point?
Yes.
Okay. See, this is exactly why I try to avoid trailers now, is that I try not to go... I try to go into a movie fresh and not have all these scenes from the trailer, you know... jumbling around in my head and trying to piece together the movie as it's going along. I want to go into it fresh and have it unfold fresh, you know? So, I didn't see that, and I think I kind of benefited from that, you know, not only seeing the trailer once or twice and then avoiding it on TV, you know. But you talk about the explosion, not just in the field, but in that fucking house.
Yeah.
That scene was incredible. It's when the kid is falling down the stairs. All this unfolds in slow motion. And I've had such a problem with slow motion recently. This movie executed it perfectly. Perfectly. You show the kid falling down the stairs and Emily Blunt running towards the bottom of the stairs. You think she's going after the kid to save him. Then you see the reaction on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face as she is hurtling him out the door.
Yeah.
That is such a perfect scene. And then as everything gets raised in the house... And then you slowly see
Jesse exploding
from the inside. I was like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome. And then the house explodes and you see the outside tracking shot from one end of the house to the other. And they don't show anything explicit except for the blood spatter.
Blood everywhere.
That was amazing. Perfect.
And this is the second movie this year that made me so fucking bad want a live action Akira movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because Akira is all about telekinesis and... Just as I'm watching this movie unfold, and I'm like, holy shit, man, why has no one made an Akira movie yet? Because two of my favorite movies this year have had
psionics.
That element to it, like Chronicle and this, and I'm just like, Hollywood, hello.
Yeah, they're making it.
Yeah, eventually, but I have a feeling, like, I just have a feeling they're not going to do it right, and Akira is such a fucking great story, and obviously movies are pulling elements from that movie, and to great effect, and doing it right, like the way it should be done, and why they haven't done it yet is crazy, but I really hope they do it soon, because I can't wait to see Akira and see it done in a full-length movie.
Wally, did you enjoy that scene as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was... She tackles him out. I thought at first that she was going to save the kid. I was like... And then when she tackles him out, I'm like, oh, shit's about to go down.
Yeah.
Because this kid's about to unleash. Can I see everything start floating? I'm like, that's a bad sign.
It was great how it was shot, too, with the three-quarter angle on top of the kid's face. Because his teeth are just coming in and kind of look like fangs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he starts kind of screaming and, like, quiet, like, yeah. I'm like, oh, you gotta get the fuck out of this house.
Yeah.
But it also makes, it also made sense, too, because you see that Emily Blunt is actually a powerful psionic herself, mm-hmm. where she's actually strong enough to override all the other TKs that were trying to hit on her, mm-hmm. where she's like talking about like how she would hold quarters down with her mind while they're trying to lift him. Like one guy almost burst a blood vessel trying to get it to lift.
Yeah. Because they're trying to use it as like a pickup technique for her. Like, hey, look what right. I can do. I can float this quarter.
But she's hurling around like bigger things.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well.
Yeah. Now, there was a point about halfway through the movie I thought... You know, with all this time travel stuff, and I was like, Jesus Christ, I think there really is only one way for this to end. Maybe for young Joe to kill himself. And that's ultimately how it ends. You know, is he kills himself. What did you think about that?
It made sense.
Absolutely.
Because he says, if he shoots Bruce Willis, that doesn't close up because everything would still happen again. Because I'm sitting there in the theater as he's making that final decision, like what he's going to do. I'm saying, all right, so if he shoots Bruce Willis still goes back in time, still causes all this, still shoots... shoots his other two kids in his quest, and then back to where they started from again.
This is the point where you can just lose your mind over time travel. And
I love that part about time travel movies. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
I love bending my head around stuff like that.
I had a slight problem with it because I thought he came to that conclusion very quickly. Like he just makes up his mind, I think, a little too fast. Like I know he had kind of like a split second to do something or not do something, but. And I think it works for the movie. I don't buy that this guy who was very... Because, I mean, he gives up Paul Dano in the beginning of the movie. Like, he gives up his best friend and just... He's only out for number one. And for him to make this complete turn by the end of the movie, which not a lot of time has passed. I think it's like, what, like 2 days maybe? The entire movie takes place in a span of a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to go from that type of kid who only cares about himself is just saving money so that he can... Just, do his own thing and get the fuck out.
Well, also think about the idea of meeting your older self. And
I think about that all the time, actually, in real life. Not even, like...
I want to get into that scene, because I think the time travel element exists in this movie solely as, like, just an excuse for, like, that scene. Where your younger self meets your older self, and it's almost like you're two different people. Because Bruce Willis... Like young Bruce Willis, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is very brash and just kind of a street smart, druggy junkie, and his older self has done a complete 180 and has changed his ways and has kind of like found someone that changed his life and got him on the straight path. And when they meet, it's like they're trying to convince each other that the other person should get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And I love that fucking diner scene. It was one of my favorite scenes in the movie where, you know, you've seen in the trailers, it's not like a spoiler. He's like, you know, why don't you do what old people do and die? And yeah. Bruce Willis is trying to plead his case like, dude, I'm doing this for you.
Mm-hmm. Because you if, your legs and
if
shoot
you
me,
do what boy. I'm telling you to do, you're going to have this great life eventually. It's going to lead you to this great woman. You're going to have a great life. You're going to be in love. And he just can't see it. Like, young Bruce Willis is just like, no, I don't want that. I want, like, what I want. Like, he's just like, no, I just want to save this money and go do what I want to do. And they just can't see eye to eye, and it's because they're so very different. And I love that scene.
Well, don't you think that young Joe could have come to that conclusion? You say it was too hasty, but he did develop a real emotional connection to both Emily Blunt and her kid, you know?
I don't know, like, over a day? Like, he's like, you know what? I'm willing to totally just end my life and save these two people because why? What was his...
He's not just saving two people. He's stopping the Rainmaker.
Right. He's stopping the Rainmaker.
But what's the Rainmaker? I mean, they paint him as like a formidable dude.
Uh-huh.
But in the future, what's he doing? He's just closing loops. Like, he's not... like it's not like said that he wiped out entire countries or he's mass murderer or anything.
Well, that's
like,
what I'm talking about. I wish they explored his character, the idea of his character a little bit more.
Yeah, but, well, they do make the point that he, in the future he's a bad person. Right. But, I mean, all they ever say he does is he closes these loops. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay.
But he controls the mob. And also, he controls this time travel, too. You know, if he controls the mobs... then he controls the idea of time travel, so who knows what else
he's doing. I guess, but it never expressly says that he's a, like an overly bad person, like he's killing innocent people or anything like that. He's not doing... I mean, at least the movie doesn't paint him that way.
Well, how do you know that?
Exactly, you don't know.
Well, I mean...
yeah. Which is why even Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character wouldn't know. Like, why is he sacrificing his life if he doesn't know what this kid becomes?
Well, I think with his interactions with the mob bosses of his present day... and all the shit that's going down, and the realization of what his future self is saying, plus seeing the capabilities of this kid at that age, that as a 6-year-old, yeah. And who knows what that can become. Then yes, I think all of this trauma could definitely lead him to do what he did.
And at one point, Emily Blunt's character does plead to Joe and say, "Just imagine what he could do if he." Ended up good.
Yeah.
And that's the idea, the wonderful theme of this movie that I brought up earlier, nature versus nurture, is explored very well in this movie, you know?
But I couldn't help but think, like, all right, so he's going to be a good superpowered telekinetic dude.
Well, maybe he what he can won't he do with that? Power.
Maybe be a superhero or something? Save people from falling? Like, I mean...
it could go anyway.
I wish it would have... exactly, it left it open, but... ultimately, it worked for me. Like,
yeah.
I thought maybe he was a little quick to make that call and just be like, you know what, I'm just going to kill myself right here in this field. And, you know what I mean? Overall, I still do like the movie. I just had a little problem with that.
Did you have much of a problem with that?
No, I mean, once he you know, realizes that I have to stop the Rainmaker, if Bruce Willis kills this kid's mom, then the Rainmaker's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this giant villainous force in the future because he's pissed.
Mm-hmm.
A pissed off guy with incredible psionic
sure,
powers.
Yeah, ultimately we get what could happen, but
yeah.
you don't think that he came to that conclusion too quickly?
No.
Okay.
Because he, at one point, mentions that most of the loopers aren't forward thinking.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they're like, oh, I closed my loop, yeah, I got my 30 bars of gold, woohoo! He's like, these are not the most forward thinking individuals. And what he's not doing is spending all his money crazily. He's saving all of his silver up.
That's right, he's one of the most forward thinking.
He is stacking up everything so that when if his time comes up, he can get the fuck out. Like,
yeah.
he's gonna try to run.
Yep.
He's gonna try to get the hell out of there and try to beat the system.
Yep.
He's already figuring out ways to get around it.
Great scene with him and Jeff Daniels where he says, I'm gonna go to France. Go to China. No, I'm gonna go to France. Trust me, I'm from the future. Go to China.
You wanna go to China.
that was funny. So, Hermano, two against one, you're wrong.
Whatever. anyway, there was something else I wanted to mention. Okay. Hopefully this isn't gonna blow anybody's mind.
Oh.
Okay, the whole idea of closing your loop, it doesn't really work, because think about it, I can't get past this, and hopefully one of you guys can, like, you know, talk me down from the ledge. All right, so the idea is that your older self gets sent back to the future, you kill him, and then supposedly that's closing your loop. But it's not really closing your loop.
No, it creates a loop because you're going to go forward again and then back, forward again and back, forward again and back.
So closing your loop is technically not the right terminology. You're technically stopping the progression of your loop.
Yes.
So,
well, it's anyway, if you're closing your loop, you're doing this. And what I'm doing is I'm gesturing by using two half circles and putting them together.
You're actually creating a loop.
You're closing a circle, actually.
Okay.
Because basically now you're like, if Hermano from the, you know, from 30
years
ago. So
it wasn't a loop to begin with.
No, it becomes a loop at that point.
All right.
Because that's why the loop is going to close. Basically, you have like an arc going up, 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 and it comes back around. And as soon as it comes back around and you kill yourself in the past,
then you're just on an endless loop.
And
because every single time you're going to get to that point and get killed, get sent to the past, get killed again, start all over again.
Exactly.
But the idea I don't get is, how do they know that your life is going to be the same every single time?
They don't. It basically, because you're going to get sent back in 30 years, and it doesn't matter what you do.
But in 30 years, I mean, you may not even be alive in 30 years. What if, like, one day you're crossing the street and you just happen to get hit by a car?
Then your loop is closed. Permanently.
Exactly. It's like,
so this is exactly why
time travel
this
discussion is flawed.
Will just mess with your mind.
Exactly.
You could go over
I don't
want to
overly analyze it.
And I don't think
I just wanted to
makes you overly analyze it. I don't think...
It makes
you
me really...
You can.
I really want to, but yeah. I don't want to at the same time, because
exactly.
It will be here for all
night. I can put it to you in terms of The Matrix, actually.
I don't want to.
When the director tells Neo, we've destroyed Zion 8 times already, and no one remembers it, because if you die...
But those are different characters. Like, it wasn't the same Neo 8 times.
But there's always a Neo.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So there's always going to be a Hermano, no matter if Hermano crosses the street after he closes... Shoots himself in the future, Hermano across the street gets hit by a bus. That happens. But there's still a Hermano in the future 30 years from now that's going to have to come back and kill him.
My other, I think, potentially big...
I love time travel movies for this reason.
I'll end on this as far as any more I want to say about the movie. But, okay, the whole idea of the kid becomes the Rainmaker in the future. But are you to believe that he becomes, in the first timeline, before Bruce Willis gets sent back, which sets forward the events that he's eventually going to become this bad person? Now, how is he the Rainmaker before that? Like, is it just because of, like, in the movie they say that Emily Blunt's character was also a junkie at one point, and that she left the kid in the care of her sister, and her sister gets killed in an accident when the kid falls off a bookshelf.
Yep.
Now, is that the original reason he became a Rainmaker?
Who knows?
But it doesn't make sense, because he's specifically mad at the loopers, right?
Who is?
The kid. He's closing loops in the future.
The Rainmaker
is
closing loops. Well, I don't know if he's not angry at loopers. He's just angry at closing loopers.
He's stopping all the bad things.
They never fully explain that.
Exactly. I feel like this movie sometimes gets away with not having to explain anything, and no one's questioning them about it. I'm like, it doesn't make sense that the kid becomes the Rainmaker, because the events that Bruce Willis set forth by coming back into the past and killing kids. I mean,
you know, these same discussions can be brought up with the original Terminator. This is the same discussion.
Exactly. Kyle Reese gets sent back and actually inevitably
becomes the father of John Connor.
Of John Connor.
So,
yeah.
So think of that. It fucking how
that
does it
makes no
in,
sense.
It makes no sense. Right, but
this also makes no sense.
Right.
Do you agree?
Well,
sort of.
I think with both movies, you can make arguments like Wally's trying to do. Make arguments.
I
want
to hear
how this makes sense.
Argument.
Well, the kid says it himself. He doesn't become the Rainmaker because he's mad at loopers or anything like that. He becomes a looper because he says it specifically. He wants to stop all the bad things.
Yep.
So at this point, stopping all the bad
things... He says he wasn't strong enough to
stop his mother from dying. So he's going to do everything he can to make sure that no one gets hurt.
Okay.
So to that end, if you own a gun and he perceives you as being a danger to somebody else,
you're dead. That makes sense because he could see loopers as these people these bad people that kill people.
That kill people.
And that's why he could want to close
And if
loops.
You think about it,
thank you, Wally. You enlightened me.
Yeah, if you think about it, like going back like only 50, 60 years, you had a man in charge of Germany that was trying to make a perfect world. He was trying to build up a perfect race, and that killed millions of people.
Whoa, this
you know
podcast
what I mean?
Just got really dark.
So now you have this kid from the future who now can just think of you being dead, and now you die.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And he wants to stop all the bad things.
But it just...
That
would mean he's become a good person in the future, but they paint him as this bad dude.
Yeah, he's his idea is good.
You look like your mind's blown. Well,
maybe
right
he's a bad dude only in the minds of the mob, because you only see it from the perspective of the mob.
Yeah,
they're the ones that talking about that he's a bad person.
True.
Yeah. So basically, he's trying to make he's trying to help everybody out, but in his mind, the end justifies the means.
But even Emily Blunt.
So if millions die,
suspects that he's going to be a bad person in the future. Like she specifically says to him, imagine what he could do if he was good, if he was brought up right, and he wasn't this just angry, like, you know, kid, like, you know what I mean, when he was younger.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'll still get
a kid done, man.
You'll still get a rainmaker.
I can't talk about this, like, or else my brain will explode. Right.
In this case, the end is going to justify the means. No matter, he's going to even out everything. So basically, if you have something like that, I'm going to start everything bad. That's all in the mind of the rainmaker. So all
right, but
even innocent people like that could be fighting.
Oh, okay.
Could
now
die.
Now here's another query. Say yes, they do stop him from doing that, like becoming a bad person. When he was a bad person, he was closing all the loops. Wouldn't that suggest that when he's a good person, maybe he won't do that?
That does suggest that.
So technically, they kind of fucked themselves. Because when he was angry and disenchanted and whatever, he was closing loops and saying "fuck these people."
All right. So now say the rainmaker doesn't say the maker turns to the side of good. His mom lives. He could actually destroy all the time travel devices so that there's no more looping,
mm-hmm.
so that no more people are getting sent
back. But
that's
you know, inserting your interpretation of what he's going to do, but nothing in the movie says that he's going
to
do that.
That is but that's how, that in theory, that's the best way for him to do it. If he doesn't have any more time traveling, if there's no more time traveling, and he goes up to be good, and he's like, you know, I saw time travel when I was a kid, and I know that this is going to lead to. This is going to lead to all this. I'm going to destroy it now, and you can't stop him.
Good call.
And these are the kind of nerd discussions that I think will keep this movie going in the minds of geekdom, if you will, and movie lovers, and that it's going to be thought of for years from now.
I'm still not ready to call it a classic, but I definitely think it's a really solid movie.
That's going to be one of the top 10 of the year for me, I guarantee you.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to mention outside of the time travel elements?
I'm done over analyzing.
Grades, Wally.
I'll give it an A.
Hermano?
I'll give it an A.
I'm giving an A as well. A for Looper from the First Time Watchers podcast. By the way, going back to Ryan Johnson, you said now you do want to go back and see Brick.
I do want to see Brick again.
And you're going to
see
Brothers Doom?
Brothers Doom is also on my queue. With that. Currently not in my house, though.
I've already seen Brick. I own it. I'm still not that interested in Brothers Bloom. I just think the overall, what I've heard from the movie doesn't...
I love the idea of a caper.
It's a good caper. It's a con caper. Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't... I don't know. For whatever reason, it doesn't hit me as something I need to see right away.
Okay. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
And we also have a Tumblr page, which is firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes. Feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will likely be discussing the 2011 French film Sleepless Night.
And that's the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch and watch and watch. See what I did there?
Well done.
Thank you.
Wally, your face looks backwards.
Oh. We'll be backwards once I punch him in the face.
Oh. Oh,
fighting words. I'm going to turn the Rainmaker on you. That's bad. All right, it's enough of that. All right, so now we have a microphone.
And how do I sound? This is Tim. Hi. Hi, Hermano.
Hi, this is Hermano. I'm here on the right side of the microphone. See how it picks me up.
Microphones don't pick you up. It's got no hands.
Aww. Aww.